It's the end of June, and here we are. We're very happy today to have as our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, David Kakuyo. His Dharma name of Kakuyo, Yo is always the sun, as you know, the bright dawn sun for all of our bright dawn lay ministers' Dharma names when they do their Kisirana or Buddhist confirmation. And the first character is more personalized. So we have all different kinds of suns, you know. My name is Koyo, or to face the sun. And Adrian's is Nayo, for inner sun. Kaku means to rise up, to swell up. And this is because David is a baker, and he often talks about, you know, the yeast in the bread, that the bread rises, swells up. And I think that's a great metaphor for to inspire one's own spiritual life. To have that Dharma as the catalyst yeast in one's life swells it up, you know, does its work. Well, in any case, for today's message, David Kakuyo.
Hello, everybody. Today is quite a nice day here in Wisconsin. My Dharma talk was occasioned approximately 3 weeks ago when I got a call from my daughter that Linda, my wife, had just finished performing a wedding ceremony in Madison, Wisconsin. And on the way back to the car, there was a small construction site or something of that manner, and she fell and broke her right hip. Of course, I didn't know that at the time. When I got the phone call, they were waiting on the ambulance. And something had changed inside me. And I didn't realize at the time what it was. I listened calmly. I gave suggestions. I made sure that everything that could be possibly done that my daughter Lisa could do was being accomplished. I knew which hospital she was going to go to, which was the University of Wisconsin Hospital, one of the best in the state. And then I waited on other phone calls. And then something was still not right inside me. Something was missing that I really didn't understand. And then I got the phone call from Lisa again that they had arrived at the hospital. She was in the room being medicated. And because it was a Saturday, there wouldn't be any major work done. It was all maintenance care just to keep her comfortable, to take some tests and whatever, and no operation or no intrusive thing would happen until Monday. Well, when I talked to Linda, she was really loopy on drugs. And again, I felt something missing from inside me, and I couldn't really identify it. So later that night, I went into meditation, and I started to replay what had happened. And the first thing that came to my mind was I was turning into a monster. I was turning into something that was different. And well, it was my ego, or the one that was always telling me that I was wrong, I was bad, I never could do anything right. And while I didn't accept that, so I continued in meditation asking myself what was missing. And it finally dawned on me that what was missing was the unreasoning fear that my wife was going to die, she was going to be a cripple for the rest of her life, I would be alone, blah, 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 goes on and on and on. And that was exactly what was missing. I was not afraid for Linda or myself. And the more I thought about it, the more it hit me that this wasn't being a monster. This was actually being a loving person who was about to accept whatever was best for Linda. And then it came to me also that I was not in the picture. I was helping, but this my help was all for Linda. And it was calm and collected and thought out and very, very, I was being in love with her for the first time again. And it was an eye-opener. And I attribute this to my studies for the last 4 years, that what I was in the past is not who I am today, and definitely who I'm not going to be tomorrow. This was the first time an emergency of this sort came up for me in the last 5 or 6 years. And I was amazed how jarring it was that my actions of today were nothing like my actions of would have been, if this would have happened 7 years ago. I would have been a basket case. I would have been worrying. I would have been, my mind would have been just on problems, problems, problems. And today, once I found that everything that I could do was being done, my mind was on peaceful thoughts, loving thoughts, and just concern about Linda. Just concern. I wasn't worried. That was my Dharma glimpse, is I have changed in a very fundamental way. I still have emotions. I still laugh. I still get angry now and then. I'm a human being, but what, you know, what was really changed, and this is really what I wanted to say, was without the baggage of fear, life was beautiful. When I saw Linda, when I went to Madison, and when she transferred here to Rocky Knoll, which is a rehab center, which is only about 10, 15 minutes away from where we live, it was, I brought the peace with me, and I believe it helped her. I know it helped me, and the smiles came not forced, but very, very easily and truthfully. And I'm going to think about this more and try to identify what was missing and what was added. But I believe that I have added to my life. And the prognosis, by the way, is she's had a hip replacement. It's almost complete recovery. She'll be home on Tuesday, and I have to do all kinds of things in the house: new railings, pick up rugs, and all the other stuff. But it's something I'm willing to do. I'm looking forward to doing it. So that's my Dharma glimpse. Training is the study that I've had has changed me fundamentally. So thank you all for listening. I hope I made sense.
Thank you very much, David Carfield. Yeah, it really resonated with me. It reminded me of a very similar situation. One of my best friends that I grew up with, this is some years ago, he was going to have a open heart surgery, bypass, I guess, and his wife, I was at the hospital, and he went into surgery, and she told me, you know, the wife was a very capable, assertive person, and I knew that she had always been effective in trying to deal with a lot of difficulties that, you know, in life. And she said that, she talked about that, and she said, but you know, I had a realization that when he was going into surgery, something like this, I have to let go of trying to feel I have to somehow assert my control over things, my desire to control, and so forth. And she just sort of gave the problem over to the universe. Or you might say to the Dharma, or you might say to all the interdependency of all the causes and conditions, or in Japanese you call it in-nen. You know, the complex interaction of causes and conditions. The human beings, sometimes we always try to want to be in control, or at least influence significantly the course of our lives, and that's only natural. And yet at some point, as my father used to put it, here's one person with his arms outstretched trying to stem the flow of the whole universe. And this is where I think spiritual acceptance comes in. The word acceptance is a problematic word in English, because a lot of times if someone says, well, you have to accept it, you have to accept this, can't help it, you feel it's a negative word, a resignation, a defeatist attitude. Fight, fight, fight. Oh, well, it's not that kind of acceptance. That's why I call it a spiritual acceptance. And it's facing reality. You know, not how we want things to be, but how things are. And that's actually a very empowering thing, because once when you accept this, or in Japanese they call it shigata ganai, which means, well, translated usually as can't help it. You know, when the Japanese Americans during the beginning of the Second World War, over 100, 120,000 on the West Coast were put into internment camps, could only take what they could carry, and in barracks in these remote desert areas in Utah and Wyoming, Arizona, in barracks, barbed wire, guards. The Issei, the first gen, second generation Japanese Americans, their predominant attitude was shigata ganai. You know, of course, there's the feelings of this is unconstitutional and so forth, uncertainties. They don't know what the future holds. Shigata ganai, can't help it. And once you accept it, instead of railing about the unfairness of it and all this, so, well, okay, accept it. Then the next thought is empowerment. What can we do best in this situation? And they made the best of it. They produced a lot of crafts and arts. They organized sports teams. They organized, you know, and of course, many went into the armed services, the young men, and formed the famous 442 Regiment. The most decorated unit in those days, the units were segregated racially, ethnically, and the 442 really demonstrated that they were Americans, you know, not hyphenated Japanese Americans. They were Americans, and they did up their heroics in Europe and on the front there. Is a tremendous testament of their response, even though their parents and their family were incarcerated behind barbed wire camps in the United States. I think without the baggage of ego-based fear and resentments and complaints and negativity, there is an inner peace that functions in the midst of life's difficulties. From that spiritual base, you are empowered, you know, to deal with, not escape, to deal with these things. It's sort of like another example I used to be given was a guy that's young Japanese American, and he's really good in sports. He's a star, you know, a basketball player, but he's short. But in his realm, he's terrific for his size. And he could lament, oh, if I was only 5 inches tall, I mean, I'd be in the NBA. I'd be a star. Oh, man, how come I, you know, and get mired in the quicksand of self-pity or whatever. Well, his parents said, well, if you want to pursue, you know, professional basketball, go with it and be the best you can be, 100%. And in fact, that player was drafted, actually one of the first non-Caucasian players in the NBA. I think it was by the Knicks, New York Knicks. Not very well known. This was before any blacks were playing in the NBA. And he was the first. He has played for Utah College. And he became the best he could be. I think this kind of spiritual acceptance is really one of the, I don't know what to say, characteristics or outcomes of a sincere spiritual life, you know, that gives rise to inner peace, harmony with your environment. Okay. It doesn't mean you don't have difficulties, huh? You know, but indeed, there was a lot of wisdom in that Shigataganai. When we used to hear our parents use that term, we youngsters, well, we didn't like that term. Like I said, that sounded, you know, like passive for us. But there's some wisdom in that. And that kind of oneness or broader perspective of things, okay, not just win, lose, strong, weak, okay, but the broader perspective, what's called takkan in Japanese, philosophical perspective, you know, a wider perspective of life, okay, really is a tremendous thing. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a very beautiful day. Thank you.